Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Jay Hughes, aka Dr. J, and I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future.
That's right. For those of you expecting Dr. Richard Sherman, the most dangerous man in Mansfield, you are getting, in fact, Dr. J, the most dangerous man in the universe. I don't know. Well, I'll let the aliens decide. I'm talking today to Jean Desmet. Desmet is your real name. Why don't you go by Desmet?
Okay. I'm easygoing. You can call me almost anything. call me late for lunch.
Jean Desmet is a former Green Party candidate for city council in Willimantic.
That's correct. I ran for first selectman.
And you do something with your hands.
I'm an electrician.
An electrician.
Right. Has not yet. Is that a leading question?
No,
it's what do I do with my hands?
I think it adds immense credibility to your anything that you have to say. I've asked Jean to be with us here today to talk about the tremendous success that the Green Party campaign for president has been having with Ralph Nader. And she is heading up the local effort along with Karen Norton, who I've also had on the program to talk about that. And let's just start off with the super rallies. We've been hearing a lot about the super rallies. Where have they been? What have they been? What's the next one's in New York, right?
Right. It's in Madison Square Garden.
It's in Madison Square Garden. Eddie Vedder's been touring with the Nader campaign. Huh?
Yes.
Is it yesterday?
I think it was
yesterday.
Yesterday or no? Maybe it's tomorrow. I don't know. I'm not going.
It's sold out.
It's sold out, and so, it's this weekend.
Yeah. but Eddie Vedder's been performing. Susan Sarandon's been with some
right.
of them.
Right. Jim Hightower.
Paul Newman.
And Bill Donahue.
Uh huh. And it's
we got a good celebrity list.
Right. And I read in the Current yesterday that the Nader campaign's raised $5 million, which was the goal.
Right. That was the goal. So that's quite an achievement. And also one of the goals was to get 5% of the vote so that we could get campaign finance for the next election.
And current
and
polls.
I think 5% and higher in Connecticut, 11% in Connecticut.
Right.
One of the polls. So that's exciting.
Right. Now, some of that may erode with the spoiler factor. So I know this is painful territory because we have to go over it. I belong, by the way, just for full disclosure, Dr. J belongs to the Green Party here in Connecticut. It's the principal progressive act in town. And, but I also belong to the Socialist Party and I belong to DSA and the Democrats ran me for office. So I have a little bit of objectivity because it's all on the left. I'm for whatever's the most left-wing thing possible going. So I'm not going to tell you that I'm a dyed-in-the-wool green, but I'm also going to tell you that I am voting for Nader, working for Nader in this campaign. So that's where Dr. J is coming from. But let's talk about the spoiler question because I have certainly been one in some circumstances to argue that the lesser of the two evils was an important thing to think about. Why is it not in this election?
Well, we're sick of that question.
I know you are. It ain't going away.
Answering it over and
ain't
over.
Ain't going right. away.
There's a couple different tacks you can take on this, I think. One is that let's just let the Democrats vote Democrat if they want to vote Democrat, and the Republicans vote Republican. And there's 75% of the people who aren't going to vote at all. So we really don't have to get more than 20% of those people to vote, and we win the election. So I'm from that point of view. I think, okay, if you're that tied to your party, go ahead and stick to your party. I'm going to win this election by getting all those other people who think the parties are selling them down the road, which they are. Those people are intelligent enough, maybe, to come out and vote and see this time that they have a candidate. When Ralph ran 4 years ago, he said there should be a slot on the ballot for none of the above. 75% of the people in America are voting for none of the above at this time, and the major party candidates don't care if you do that. If you stay home, they don't care. They mm-hmm. ignore you. They love it, in fact, because they don't have to please you. Now all they have to do is please their corporate friends. If we come out and vote, then we'll take over this election and we'll take over our country back. You know, that's what it's all about, is bringing democracy back. A spoiler. The other thing is, I guess some people think that you should, in Connecticut, where we're ahead of the game, that you should vote, the Democrats should vote green, because here it won't make a difference.
Right. That's based on the Electoral College. If you're in a state, the argument goes, if you're a progressive person and you're in a state where either Bush is definitely going to win the state or Gore is definitely going to win the state, your state's electoral votes are going to go into one of those two camps, whether no matter how you vote for Nader. So you might as well vote for Nader.
Right.
And that's probably 30, 40 states. So there are only a handful of states where it's going to be close enough to rationalize you. And people don't understand that about the Electoral College, that it's not the popular vote that elects a president. It's the Electoral College.
Exactly. So your vote really doesn't have a very big impact in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other ways of looking at it are people say, aren't you wasting your vote by voting for somebody who's not going to win? Which, to me, I don't even really get the logic in that. I think you're wasting your time and your vote when you go vote for somebody you don't like.
Right.
Another thing that we had in the last election was clothespins put on your nose so you can go in and vote Democrat. Hold your nose and vote Democrat.
That's good.
We don't want you to do that. We want you to not hold your nose and vote Green. How can you go in there and vote for somebody you despise? You can see them on TV. The debates are doing wonderful for Nader's campaign.
Right.
Everyone sits there and watches these guys and says, they're both lying.
Yeah.
They're lying.
The thuggery first of his exclusion from the first debate, I think, bumped him up 2% in the polls.
Yeah.
Because when people saw that, right? Just recount recount the events for us.
It's actually a 40% increase, as Michael Moore put it, in the Nader in the polls as a result of the exclusion from the debates. Essentially, we lobbied very hard to get Ralph Nader put on the debates. They called the major corporations who were sponsoring it, like Budweiser and Ford, and we called the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and we called the news stations. They tried very hard in many ways to get Nader put on here. But what people don't seem to get right away is that when they say it's a bipartisan commission that runs the debates, that means there's two parties and only two parties. The reason they want 15% of the people are 15% that a candidate has to poll 15% of the voters before the debate to get into the debate.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that number is so high is because Perot got close.
Right.
And they almost had to let Perot get
He got in on the first one. It affected the election.
And so they changed the rules to get Perot out.
Right.
And that's the kind of people we're dealing with here. If Nader got 15%, they changed the rules to 25%.
You contrast that with Israel, where it only takes 2% of the popular vote for your party to be represented in the Knesset. In Italy, it only takes 5% of the popular vote to be represented. That's not just to get into a debate. That's to be represented in the parliament.
Well, we have a real fundamental problem with the way the whole system is set up, and it's a winner-take-all, as the Electoral College shows. There's no progression. There's no percentage for smaller parties. It's if you win, you win it all, and you don't. And it's just a flawed system, and other countries that are becoming democracies are not adopting the American system because of that. It's much more democratic, and it encourages people to vote more if you have more parties.
Mm-hmm. Now, so the goals beyond the debate are to build the Green Party.
Right.
To build the progressive movement. I think Ralph has been one of the most forthright. I think back to the Rainbow Coalition was great, and Jesse Jackson represented a lot of things. The Rainbow Coalition that he organized, however, was a personality cult around him and fell apart as soon as he decided that it was no longer a vehicle for his interests. He just stopped building it, and it fell apart. Barry Commoner put a lot of energy into the Citizens Party, which maybe is a more cogent example, but then they didn't nominate him for the 84 election, and it kind of went to pieces after that.
Well, the same thing with Ross Perot and the Reform Party. The Reform Party had no platform. It was just Ross Perot's
Although
party.
Although it's falling apart. It's been a heck of a lot more colorful than the previous falling apart.
Well, one of the reasons it's falling apart is they got money this time, and boy, did that create some fights. So the Green Party has to be aware of that. It's a sign of what happens when you
That's in the Democratic Socialists of America. We've long debated these electoral politics questions, and one of the arguments that's made around this is that as soon as any political organization becomes powerful enough to actually be a sustainable third party in American politics, that the same interests that invade and take over, the corporate interests that invade and take over The two major parties will invade and take over the third party. And I think you see some of that dynamic. It's not necessarily all corporate interests, but radical communist cell groups, neo-Nazi hate mongers, all kinds of people went into the Reform Party and tried to take it over.
And tried to take the money.
Now, right. Now the Green Party's been, recently there was an accord signed between the National Greens USA, Green Party USA, and the Association of State Green Parties. You don't know? Okay, you're shaking your head. I know. Tom Savigny here from Connecticut's been involved essentially in that, and more can be found out about that, but I think it's called the Vermont Accords or the Massachusetts Accords.
Right. Anyway, it's going to be brought up to all the local chapters of the Connecticut and I guess all the state parties, and we'll decide on whether we are willing to vote for this or not.
Right.
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
In fact, last time in Massachusetts, there were people petitioning, this is 4 years ago again, to get Nader onto the ballot in Massachusetts. And the Green Party petitioned, and the Association of Green Parties petitioned, and they had separate petitions. And between the two, it didn't. It would have added up to enough to get him on the ballot.
Painful.
But because they had different petitions, it didn't qualify.
Yeah, that's painful.
Yeah, so this kind of small, yeah. You know, you were saying you're a member of a lot of different parties.
Yeah.
And I'm a member of a lot of different organizations. I mean, the Labor Party. I'm a member of the Labor Party.
Right.
Something is going to happen in this country. And this is what the Green Party is all about and why this campaign is great that Ralph Nader is our key person, but it's also okay if he doesn't run again. Somebody said, what if he doesn't run next time? It's like, well, we'll get another candidate.
This is not about Ralph Nader.
This party is not about Ralph Nader. This is a party. It's an international party. And it doesn't have to be called the Green Party as far as I'm concerned. Maybe in 10 years the name of the party will change to something else. But we're going to have to get all these parties that are coming up and unite them.
Yeah.
The Labor Party should be coming out, and the New Party is another one. We need to unite behind one candidate instead of each running our own candidates.
Mm-hmm. And I think this race has contributed a lot to that, to people recognizing the viability of that project.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit about issues. One of the campaign issues that I've been long an advocate of is national health insurance. Mm-hmm. And when people, there's been a flurry of liberal attacks on Nader, and attacks in particular on the argument that there isn't an important difference between Bush and Gore. And I wouldn't go so far as to say that there isn't an important difference. I would prefer Gore as president to Bush. But one of the issues that I think is so glaring about American society, American politics, is an issue that even President Clinton saw as his principal policy priority in 1992 when he was elected. And then he got beat up for it by the big insurance companies, and he and every other major politician have stayed away from it. And 45 million Americans uninsured in the country, only industrial country like that. And Nader's the only principal candidate talking about that.
It's not even just the industrial countries that have it. Nicaragua and countries in Central America, part of the whole struggle with the World Trade Organization, the World Bank fights in those countries are that our banks are insisting people not have free health care. In those countries. And they've already got that right, and we don't have it here, and we're trying to take it away
around the world. If you listen to the presidential debates, you would think that Bush and Gore both see every American as being over 65 years of age. Because the only health care issue that they have addressed is prescription drugs on Medicare.
And that is such, I mean, Edith Prague was a great closet green. advocates for those kind of things. And she'll say it all the time. It's just another Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are little Band-Aids, and the problem is bigger than that, and it can be solved so easily. One of the things Ralph Nader said in one of his speeches is, we have the solutions to these problems. They're right there in front of us. We've just chosen to ignore them. And universal health care, people say, well, is the Canadian system perfect? It may not be perfect, but in this country, people can't afford simple dental care. They can't get their teeth cleaned. There's real basic things that we can't afford.
I'm talking with Gene DeSmet. This is a special edition of Change Surfer Radio. I switched with Richard Sherman. He'll be back in this slot next week. But we're talking about the Nader campaign and the Green Party. By the way, you can find out information about the Nader campaign at votenader.com, votenader.org. either of those sites. You can find out information about the Green parties internationally at greens.org, www.greens.org. Is that correct? Greens.org. I think it is correct. And you can find out information about how to connect to the local Green Party campaign, Ralph Nader campaign, if you contact.
Well, you can call me at 456-2188, or you can get onto our local website, which is in the ConnecticutGreens.org.
Mm-hmm. You can follow the connections from there.
And just follow it right to the local one.
Let's talk about another issue, marijuana legalization. I have one of the first forays that took me out of traditional political correct left-wing politics was when, back in the 80s, I and my cell decided that we were socialists for drug legalization. And people started beating us up and saying that we were racist because we were trying to sell drugs to the African-American community, all kinds of things. There's been a sea change in progressive attitudes. I mean, a lot, back then, it was principally conservative libertarians who were arguing for it. But there's been a progressive change as well. Progressives have begun to see that the drug war is fundamentally a racist war. It's a classist war. It's exploding the populations of our prisons. It's militarizing the inner-city community. It's giving a new motivation for counterinsurgency, U.S. support of horrible things going on in the third world. And, again, Nader's the only campaign. The other two candidates... one's a former alcoholic and drug abuser and didn't go to jail for it. The other admitted that he smoked pot. Neither of them are calling for drug legalization. Ralph Nader's calling for marijuana legalization.
When I first was hearing all these rumors about George Bush's past, I thought, well, maybe he has something good going for him. But he doesn't have the guts, as most of the people in this country don't have the guts to say, yes, I use drugs, and it's not all that horrible. You know? It didn't kill me. I've recovered. I'm fine. The Nader platform is treatment, not prison. Just like any other healthcare problem, you don't put people in prison for it. You get them treatment. The prison is a very expensive, to the public, way of getting people who are drug addicts off the street instead of putting them in treatment centers. The wealthy people, as you said with Bush, they go to a treatment center for a month. The poor people, we put them in prison for a month. That's not the way to beat an addiction. And it's just such a hypocrisy in our society. I'm livid about it, that parents are lying to their kids. And we've all become afraid of drug tests at work and things like that. You can't get a job. You get fired from your job. It's a real insidious Nazi thing.
And in 5 minutes, when we finish this particular interview and go on to the next thing I need to do with the show, I'm going to play a cart that I've made here for the Jubilee Justice Campaign, which is a campaign to get President Clinton to declare clemency for all federal drug prisoners. Uh-huh. And I consider the prisoners of the drug war to be prisoners of war. They are prisoners of political prisoners of conscience.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple more issues. In the vice presidential debate, there was what some people consider to be a telling moment when Lieberman said, "You certainly seem to have benefited from the economy, Mr. Cheney," and Cheney turned back and said, "Yes, but it had nothing to do with the government." And the hypocrisy and absolute nonsense of that statement went totally uncommented upon, not only by Lieberman because of his political blinders, his corporate finance blinders, but most of the commentators. When we're talking about a former Secretary of Defense who went immediately to work for a defense contractor, sucked up millions and millions and millions of dollars of federal money for defense contracts, absolutely worthless, down a rat hole drain, and no one challenged him on it. What can you say?
You can say that, yeah, it's all one party here. It's all one system. It's only 25% of this country that thinks this way and buys this stuff, and it's a real shame we're letting them run us.
Mm-hmm.
This also relates right to campaign finance reform.
Exactly.
Where Lieberman could never, ever vote against any defense budget. He gets lots of money from the defense contractors, as does Sam Gaidenson. And they're running our country into the hole with their defense budgets for weapons that the Pentagon says they don't need.
Bush gets up there and smugly beats up on Gore for not being strongly enough for defense. And Gore's budget has proposed more in defense spending than than Bush's.
Yeah. It's got nothing to do with truth. Yeah. You know? Not, you know, when you got the Defense Department saying we don't need submarines, and still Congress has to push submarines because it's a payback for the helicopter guy or whatever other vote they need.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just a terrible system. And it's more, it's not even defense only. The campaign finance, you got the telecommunication companies, you've got our companies during the Reagan era were paid to move to other countries. Mm-hmm. I mean, close your factory and move overseas and we'll give you money. Mm-hmm. That was clearly the corporation gave Reagan a lot of money to pass a bill that give them money in return for doing what mm-hmm. they wanted to do at the expense of the American public all the way. I mean, the workers are paying for a company to move away.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I was delighted to see recently was Ralph Nader's position on the UN peacekeeping role, because one of the places where I've locked horns with local progressives that I've debated with, has been about the U.S. role in international peacekeeping vis-a-vis UN, NATO, and so forth. And there is a strain of isolationism on the U.S. left, people who think that any time the U.S. goes abroad and does something, we usually screw it up and we're usually on the wrong side and we spend a lot of dollars we shouldn't.
Some truth to that.
And there's some truth to that. And that the U.N. has been often a tool of American foreign policy, and there's some truth to that as well. But Nader has come out, and this relates directly to defense spending. If, as President Clinton said he was for in 1992 and then got beat up for it and stopped being for it, if we were to strengthen the UN's role in international peacekeeping, pay our UN dues, strengthen the UN's military capability, we wouldn't have to rely on U.S. troops for that police role.
I think it's a bigger picture than that in my mind, and that is that, for example, in Yugoslavia, there was a very active peace movement before any war started, but as a nation, we tend to ignore anybody except the tribal leaders that we've chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Who are usually militarists. So we ignore the peace movements. We don't encourage that. Lieberman's always saying we have to find the rebels and fund the rebels. But the peacekeepers that we send are often trained militarily.
Mm-hmm.
They're not trained as peacekeepers.
True.
So that mission has to be changed to peacekeeping.
True.
And there's a lot more to peacekeeping than just holding your gun in somebody's face and saying, Don't cross this line, or
right.
Don't shoot. We should be, yes, fostering peace around the world. That would be a wonderful...
Well, I suspect that Ralph agrees with you on that as well.
Yeah, let me bring up something for someone else, and that is, I believe it's next Tuesday at the Storrs Meeting House, there's
okay.
going to be a discussion on this.
Good.
Exact topic, so...
Good. And the local Nader campaign will meet a couple more times.
We're meeting Monday at 6 o'clock at Main Street Cafe in Willimantic,
okay.
and that's going to be a strategizing session. And then we're going to, I guess there's a whole lot of leaflets and stuff that we've gotten, so we need lots of help. Today,
I brought in yard signs for you. I ordered okay. yard signs from the national campaign.
All right.
I'm going to give
How'd
them
you
to
do that? I couldn't get there.
I'll give you the website.
I got the website. I couldn't get anything out. We need people to distribute stuff. We need lots of volunteers. So, it could be as simple as taking 100 brochures and walking door to door in your own neighborhood and dropping them in people's doors and just getting the word out that he's running and that he's a viable candidate.
Jean, I want to really thank you for coming in today. And I hope that people have an opportunity to connect with this exciting campaign now and afterwards, after the election,
right.
when the real
right.
important stuff starts happening,
right.
when we start building this progressive movement. Thanks again for coming,
this
Jean.
This is just the beginning.
Exactly. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes@changesurfer.com. That's jhughes@changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website. www.changesurfer.com. Previous Change Surfer radio programs can be listened to from www.changesurfer.com and streaming MP3, thanks to the Radio for All Project.